I'm your host, Robert Johnson, and you're listening to the Build It Better podcast, powered by Framecad. We all want a better way. Join us as we discuss the benefits of light gauge steel and we dispel the myths and bring you the ways the informed construct the world around us. You've built it the old way, now build it better. Welcome to the Build It Better podcast, powered by Framecad. I'm your host, Robert Johnson, and we have finally gotten together after following each other on LinkedIn for several years and watching each other from afar. I am thrilled to have Dan Weiss with Weiss Offsite. You know what? There are so many Weiss, TJ Weiss, Weiss Drywall, Weiss Offsite. You guys own St. Louis, I think. So thanks for coming on, and I appreciate us finally connecting, and absolutely thrilled to have you, man.
No problem. Thank you. And I'll go ahead and correct everybody right now. It's Weiss, just in case everybody knows.
So, yeah. You know what? I usually ask, and thank you so much, because I have said Weiss forever. Everybody in our company says Weiss, and yeah. It's Weiss.
It's all good. You know, I normally actually don't correct people. But you know, in conversations like this where I can reach a mass audience, we will happily correct everybody try to at one time. Otherwise, no. I don't really care. It happens every day of my
life. But I'll tell you why that's funny is because I always struggle with the spelling of your last name. Because yeah. I say Weiss, I try to make it W-E-I-S.
Right.
Which I did this morning in writing notes. Then I looked up and thought, oh wait, it's W. Yeah, that doesn't Thank you. We got it. The world's got it now, and I won't make that mistake, but probably three or four more times during this podcast.
It's all good.
But, take a minute and introduce yourself, your company, kind of the high level of view of you and what you do.
Totally. So I am Dan Weiss with Weiss Offsite and Weiss Drywall. I think you mentioned some other companies earlier. They are same family, but we do actually compete every day. So that is also a different...
Wait, you compete with your own family?
Yeah.
That's funny. We'll have to dig into that.
Yeah, and we will. It's all good. So you know, I am third generation in Weiss Drywall and Construction Corporation. That's what my grandfather and his brother named our company back in 1971.
Wow.
When they started, but my family goes back even into what the mid early 60s in drywall contracting. So back in those days, they had a company called Drywall Engineers, and Drywall Engineers did, oh gosh, they were up over 500 people, did all kinds of different projects all over the region.
That's amazing.
You know, that was back in the day when we were transitioning from plaster to drywall, and yep. we just had to beat the plasters. So. Yep. So that's kind of where things have evolved from. And even back in the early 70s, we were panelizing projects. We were prefabbing. We were doing all kinds of things just like that. And that's what then, you know, transitioned us to spin off this company called Weiss Offsite, where we industrialize construction, implement industrialized construction practices every day now.
Now, and are you also a STO?
I am not.
That has something to do with the other side. Am I correct?
Correct. So okay. I actually have drive it. So I have a
okay,
drive it.
Perfect. That's one of the things I wanted to talk about. Yeah. I spoke to drive it several years ago when they first came out with their prefab, pre-finished panel product mm-hmm. that they were doing for the, you'll recall this, when they came out with their offering for doing pre-finished panels. I see no difference in finish whatsoever. I like the fact, this is just me personally, and I'll get your opinion on this. I like the fact that it's pretty much anybody and everybody, that it's not a territory that, there's some advantages to being territory driven, but I really like, and I like the drive it products. Have you done much of it? Are you using much of it?
You know, in our market, we've looked at quite a few projects with it on there. I haven't really completed one to date in factory, full disclosure. I have one coming up. you know, honestly, our market, I'm in St. Louis, Missouri. EFIS is not necessarily a huge driver here. We
right.
do it because,
right.
you know, we get some inquiries more regionally speaking for those. We will put a lot of air and vapor barrier on panel in facility, and we use a multitude of different products for that.
But you will, you still do, you'll apply, you won't just send a prefab framed panel. You are sending and shipping in some cases sheeted panels.
We've done everything from, yeah, almost everything is sheeted unless, you know,
oh,
there's
really?
Some kind of special mm-hmm. reason not to. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So everything has a gyp sheathing on it mm-hmm. and then, or plywood. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, typically exterior panels all get air and vapor barrier. We really like peel and stick products for that. Mm-hmm. We have a couple in particular we like, but we'll use whatever. We don't necessarily care as long as we can, you know, really apply it well and efficiently in facility. Mm-hmm. And we've actually done some interior one-sided finished panels in facility as well.
Now, so that's something I haven't seen yet.
Yeah, and we've finished taped in facility. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Just one side, right.
But still, man, that saves a lot of time. If you can pull it off, figure it out and pull it off, that saves a ton of time. Okay. I chased a rabbit there, which you'll find that I do often.
Okay.
Let's go back into the whole legacy thing. So of course, one of the reasons that we talk about prefab, and roll forming equipment and things of that nature, is the labor force, is getting harder and harder and harder to find, skilled labor, coming from the legacy side of this, where when I grew up, and you're a much younger man than I am, I mean, everybody got out of high school. That's what you did. You went into the trades. That's how you made money. And it's gone. It's moved away from that. Do you find that in that vein that being able to get into, or that we're starting to step up the game in innovation now, and I think at least I feel like that's bringing in some of the younger again, and giving them a space with CAD and design and things of that nature. Would you agree? Give me your take on that.
You know, I think, gosh, that's a really deep subject, right?
Yeah.
It's a multi-pronged head subject. I think, you know, we're getting to the point where the cost benefit analysis on college isn't, you know, the benefit's not there anymore as much.
Great
depending,
point.
You know, if you're a skilled trade, right? Anytime I start talking about this, I will go ahead and preface it. Mm-hmm. Yes, you always want your doctor, your engineer, you want all these folks, you know, any licensed profession, you want them to have plenty of education and plenty of hands-on experience, right? And have really deep implemented processes for that. I'm not talking about those folks. I'm talking about your folks, you know, they're going to get a generic business degree or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, nobody really in my company, and even in our management side, nobody really has college degrees. I mean, like I do, my brother does, my dad does, but everybody else like has some college, things like that. We don't care. I mean, I think that's really what it comes down to. Society is to the point where we don't necessarily care anymore, and especially in the trades, at medium and smaller companies like mine, it just doesn't matter. What I care about is, can you do your job really effectively?
Right.
Can, you know, do you have a specialized knowledge and skill set that you can apply every day here? You know, as far as getting younger folks in the trades, yeah, I think obviously updating our technology, it's really hard. I go and do a decent amount of recruiting efforts in high schools and partnering with nonprofits. Mm-hmm. You know, they're out here designing things on an iPad, 3D printing things. Meanwhile, I'm out here saying like, hey, how about you grab this pencil and yeah. utility knife and tape measure and come to workforce every day?
Right.
You know, and when we can start updating our processes like we have, you know, I think that's going to be a huge benefit even furthermore. I mean, we're just updating our processes to what we have every day, cell phones, you know.
Oh, great example. And the other one that you mentioned, I always use the copper Tepex thing, but when you brought up plaster to drywall, that's one that went back even farther that I had never thought of. And I don't remember, I would have been too young when that move was happening, but I'm sure there was pushing against going from plaster to drywall, or to some extent, maybe not like copper to PEX and wood to steel, but yeah. So do you find it a challenge? I know it won't be so much for the younger, but do you find it a challenge to bring the new to the skilled journeyman? I've always done it this way. I've pulled the tape. I've used C clamps and that kind of guy.
You know, I would say it just depends on the person and whether they're young. You know, we've had young people really resistant. We've had, older, more seasoned people who are really resistant. We've had seasoned people adopt. We've had young people adopt. I really just think it depends on a person's outlook in life. The one thing I do know is that anytime we can implement, take a process that is already there that folks have operated in for 53 years, like at Weish Drywall, and you can seamlessly integrate that and actually make their life easier with a new process, I do know our rate of adoption is much higher.
Yeah.
Much, much higher.
You bring up a great point. One of the things that was a struggle for me, three, 4 years ago, I know it's been around longer than that, but as the prefab world and especially when wood prices were so much higher and people were coming to you for conversion of projects from wood to steel much more than they are today, when things went out to bid and your MEP guys said, oh, it's going to be light gauge steel, my price is going to go up. And you've heard this, you've seen this. And then we had to do a mock-up. You had to get the electrician in and say, we'll punch a hole wherever you need a hole punched. We'll do this, we'll do that. Why would your price go up? And then they're like, oh, well, this is going to be much easier. Yeah, you're right. It shouldn't affect my price so much. So I think it's really interesting what prefab and where it is has, where we've come from and where we're going. The whole mindset of prefab, you brought up the fact that you've been doing prefab years ago before the roll former thing really became a thing, at least the prefabricated frame CAD architect Howick type roll forming systems came about. So you were doing it with traditional metal studs, I would assume.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah. Compression tables and all the fun stuff that went along with it. How has that mindset of prefab changed from the early years of prefab?
You know, that's a great question. I don't think the mindset has changed as far as the production and installation goes. I think that is there. People recognize efficiency. People recognize things like that. I think really where the mindset has changed is, like, we have the opportunity to produce a 400 level of design construction set documents before we even step foot on the job site.
Correct.
And, a lot of companies, we do this in-house at my company, at Weese Offsite. Mm-hmm. We have multiple on-staff detailers, we call them. And just, gosh, when you can go through and line out and get 95% of the RFIs on a project figured out, and this is whether you roll form it or not, right? This is whether we actually do any prefab or not. These processes really matter. And anytime we get the opportunity to go through and really put a detailed model together, we get these questions.
Yeah.
Why are you guys asking us all these, why are you submitting all these RFIs today when you're not even on the job yet? Right. We're just like, yeah, because we're streamlining your project. And so efficiency matters, right? And then when you add in, so that's my always basis of operations, especially when I start with a factory tour, we always run through our modeling process first. I always start there and that's then we wisdom. Go to the factory.
Yeah.
Because the factory, everything's set off the model, right? And so, yeah, awesome. We can, have a lot more precision because we have roll forming equipment. We can, assemble things faster because we have all this roll forming equipment and we can put everything together. But it all starts there.
The whole piece, it's one of the things that chokes a lot of people, a lot of developers, architects that aren't used to the system. When you start, there's developers that I'll talk to that at least used to before they'd even spoken to an architect. And I'll say to them, oh, this is perfect timing. get an architect, give me a floor plan, and then let me get started. And I'll let's put a model together, and then I'll give you my model that you can then disseminate to your MEP guys instead of the other way around, which we've always done. And you spend much more time in the design side, the detailing side, but it makes everything else not just builds efficiencies for you, the manufacturer and installer, but for the millwork guy, for all your MEP, all that stuff. It's for the general contractor. It's a game changer that people don't understand until they've gone through the process. And I don't know for you, but for me, every customer that I ever had that was their first time to do this type of a system said, I don't know why haven't built this way forever. I mean, the general contractor was like, I didn't have anything to do for 4 or 5 months because it was just everything was done for me. Do you find that to be a common theme coming from people that do something with a design-led system?
Totally. You know, project schedules really matter. Time really matters, right? We're in construction. Time equals money, especially to the developer who is trying to get these projects open faster to produce revenue quicker, especially to the general contractor who, you know, their general conditions really matter to them, right? As it should.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, anytime that we can do that and take advantage of that and really help folks and streamline things, 100%, you know, and I don't know about other folks, but, you know, we're always pretty much a cost even is what we strive really hard for. Because I hear this a lot. I hear a lot of people talk about like, well, prefab, you know, it's normally for those companies out there who are taking a commodity stud, shall we say, from a drywall supplier or whatever, and then processing that. Well, anytime that we're doing that, we are adding, you know, price per foot because we have to do something to that stud. Where for us, it's like, it's a cost even because, you know, we're able to put that in and spit that out of our machines pretty quickly and everything's already ready to go together and our assembly time is really limited. So, you know, prefab should, in my opinion, if we can make it, it's a cost even. If we have to expedite things or things like that, then, you know, costs like that are added. But then we can protect that cost though too, because we can procure coil, we can procure chipboard, we can get things, you know, we can minimize our waste because we have this thing put together, this model put together. We can do a lot.
So you bring up another really great point. And when we're talking light gauge steel to light gauge steel, projects that were already going to be done light gauge steel that now go to, they were going to be done traditionally. Now they're going to prefab, it being a cost even piece. That's one of the things. And I totally agree with you. That's one of the things that so many people struggled with in the early days of this was, well, how do I price this? And yeah, I get it when you first get into it, but after you experience it and you understand that, yeah, I'm not having to chop saw every stud and I'm not having to do this. But you are having to do things that you don't do when you do it traditional. So, I think that's great. Now, let me ask you a question. Because this is the big debate and, you know, this opinion is all over the board. Wood to steel, what are you seeing? Is it cost even? Is steel slightly higher still, or is it more competitive?
I know in my market, I don't get too many. I've had a couple at bats at converting something from wood to steel, but oftentimes it's too far down the road. So when we start talking about, okay, we have to respend the engineering cost, you know, we have to do these things, all of a sudden it throws us out. Generally speaking, though, on the front end of projects, you know, wood versus steel, it's potato, potato. It just depends on the job, I think, furthermore. If you're talking about having, you know, masonry stairwells, if you're talking, it just depends on what the job is. Because I know with coal form, we can get rid of those, right? As long as we can get shear in and other means and methods. We can oftentimes eliminate a lot of the ancillary steel, red iron, whatever you want to call it, that goes into a project.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're sucking up other line items in a budget. If you just look at straight wood to coal form, then yeah, of course we're going to be higher, but there's a lot of other budgetary things in there. I think one of the most overlooked things that people don't look at is your insurance costs, the builder's risk policies.
Huge.
that go into that. You know,
especially
right now,
builder's risk.
Oh, especially, yeah. Because, I mean, you're talking about, what is it? It's around 50 cents a square foot or something like that for wood in my market. And I think it'd be around 15% or 15 cents for non-combustible. So those are huge cost reductions.
Yeah. The analogy that I use is that if you're talking to, say, the general contractor who is always, who tends to look at things in a line item basis, and you're looking at wood and steel, because I had these arguments all the time. They'd come in and say, well, my wood number's $22 a square foot, and you're at $34 a square foot. Well, yeah, you're just looking at the, you know, you're looking at wood to steel. The real win comes in, I think, for that developer, that owner, that build and hold person that gets the benefit of that builder's risk, that can actually look at it in a pro forma base instead of a line item base, the time savings, the quicker ROI, less interest payments on your loan, all those kind of things that have to go into it. Then I think it, again, if you're in it early enough before they've done it, before they've designed it in timber, then I think that we have something, we have an argument there for being very competitive, and maybe in some cases even slightly less depending on the project. But yeah, great points all.
Well, that's it for part one of a two-part series with Dan Weiss of Weiss Offsite. You know what we say, we've all built it the old way, now let's go build it better. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for listening to the Build It Better podcast powered by Framecad. Be sure to leave a review on iTunes, subscribe on YouTube, and check us out at builditbetterpodcast.co. I'm Robert Johnson. Thanks for listening.